time he comes around. She's got a second sight, she knows every time he comes to town. Ain't it strange to think I want her? I don't need her any longer, baby. Let the bygones be. Let the bygones be.
Do you love classic rock but hate the lack of variety on classic rock stations? Then tune in to Classic Rock Mine. Classic Rock Mine delivers classic rock that rocks. From bands you know like Grand Funk Railroad, Mott the Hoople, and Uriah Heep, to bands you don't know like the Flower Traveling Band, Papo's Blues, and Nectar. Classic Rock Mine. It's the best classic rock you've never heard. Saturday nights from 9 to 11 on 91.5 WMFO Medford, Tufts University Radio.
Sure. was a time coming and going, a time wanting but not really knowing. We took the boat out of the water, already missing my son and missing my daughter.
Hey, this is Scruffy Wallace, the Dropkick Murphys, and you're listening to WMFO Medford.
Mm-hmm. asymptomatic carriers. What is this we're hearing about? It's on surfaces and I need to disinfect everything. Is it on my clothes? Is it on my shoes? Why am I wearing a mask? Understand that we began this process with no knowledge whatsoever about what this virus is, how it spreads, what it does. All we have... WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. Man, does it feel good to be able to say that again. I am Derek Gary. It is The Big Picture. This is a pre-recorded version of The Big Picture, so I'm not giving out the phone number tonight. You can't call in. We'll figure that out down the road. For now, it is just amazing to be back on the air at the regular time talking to everybody. Hi, how have you been? It's been an interesting 7 weeks, 8 weeks. No, it's been 7 weeks now since the last time that Chase Blaine and I were together at WMFO. When I left, I was planning to take that next week off because my wife and I are having a baby, and now we have a baby. He is 7 weeks old. He is amazing. He is doing well. If you like colic, you will love this baby. But at the same time that we were having the baby, the whole world turned upside down. So what would have just been a one-week absence for The Big Picture has now turned into 7 weeks. I did get some shows up on YouTube. If you want access to that, I can post that at some point down the road. I don't even remember the name of my channel. That's aside the point. We're back. We're on the air. Hello. How have you been? How are you holding up? It's been an interesting 7 weeks. And it was an interesting time having the baby because every day for just about a week, because my wife was in the hospital from Friday night, the Friday after our last broadcast, which I believe was the 6th of May, or the 6th of March, rather, through the following Thursday, we were in the hospital. And I would go in every single day and watch the stock market collapse and watch the government hem and haw over whether they were going to shut things down and watch the death toll rise and the cases rise and everyone sort of lose their minds. And during that time, I spent, because I couldn't be on the air, I spent a good amount of time on social media updating people with what was happening, what I knew, what the experts know, and that is where we are going to start tonight. I want to answer a few of the questions that we still have. And I want to say, from the outset, there aren't definitive answers yet. There will be someday. It doesn't do us any good to push for that. I won't say it doesn't do us any good to hope for that. It doesn't do us any good to push for that. It doesn't do us any good to sit back and say, you know what, in another week, we're going to have the answers. In another month, we're going to have the answers. We don't know when we're going to have the answers. This is a diabolical virus. This may be the most diabolical virus that we have encountered since HIV. Because this virus does something. It does a few things, actually, but it does one thing that most viruses have the courtesy not to do. It spreads through people who don't show symptoms. And that is the problem. That problem has been compounded by mistakes that have been made by our government, by the Chinese government, by the World Health Organization. There is a lot of blame to go around when we ask the question of how did we get here? But we are here. And what we need to do now is to start thinking about where do we go next? How do we move past this? And the way that we do that is with information and facts and reasonable conclusions based on scientific evidence, not based on anyone's gut feelings, not based on what you personally feel, but based on what science and history and data are telling us. So while we still don't have all of the answers about this virus, we do have some that we're fairly confident about. So let's start with what we know. And the first question on everybody's mind, I believe, is how does this virus spread? What is this we're hearing about asymptomatic carriers? What is this we're hearing about it's on surfaces and I need to disinfect everything? Is it on my clothes? Is it on my shoes? Why am I wearing a mask? Understand that we began this process with no knowledge whatsoever about what this virus is, how it spreads, what it does. All we had was a little bit of observational evidence from Wuhan, China, and people getting sick all over the place. What we've learned since then is that this virus primarily, almost exclusively, spreads through respiratory droplets. So if you are infected with coronavirus, whether you are showing symptoms or not, your breath, which is moist, is full of virus. Every time you cough, every time you sneeze, every time you talk, every time you breathe, you are shooting virus out into the air. And if someone is near you and that virus gets into their nose, gets into their mouth, gets into their eyes, they are now infected. That is the primary way that the virus spreads, is through respiratory droplets. That's bad news because people who don't have the virus, or people who, excuse me, not people who don't have the virus, but people who don't have symptoms can spread the virus. The good news is respiratory droplets don't move more than 6 feet. And if you wear a mask, you can probably prevent them from spreading much beyond your mouth. This is why we've been asked to wear masks. This is why masks are becoming mandatory in many places. Because the consensus of the scientific community, the consensus of epidemiologists, the consensus of doctors, is that coronavirus spreads through respiratory droplets. Anything else you may have heard about how it might spread, probably not happening. Doesn't mean you let your guard down. Doesn't mean you start touching your face or stop washing your hands. But it does mean that we think we're fairly sure that respiratory droplets are the main way that people are getting coronavirus. So that's one thing we know. Can you get the virus? This is another big question that comes up over and over again. Can you get the virus from food? No. Period. No. There are no known cases of food transmitting coronavirus, which means it's okay for other people to cook for you. Can you get it from food packaging? According to the FDA, and I'm going to trust them because the government will get sued if they give out bad advice. And it is the FDA's job to know this sort of thing. This is from their website. And I quote, currently, there is no evidence of food containers or food packaging being associated with transmission of COVID-19. Like other viruses, it is possible that the virus that causes COVID-19 can survive on surfaces or objects. What does that mean? It means yes. If I cough on a piece of cardboard, the virus can survive there. But it doesn't mean that that virus can infect somebody. The FDA goes on to say this. If you are concerned about contamination of food or food packaging, wash your hands after handling food packaging, after removing food from the packaging, before you prepare food for eating, and before you eat. Wash with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. If you are super concerned, you can wipe down food packaging with disinfectant wipes. Doesn't seem to be necessary. Another thing that doesn't seem to be necessary, according to a number of doctors, wearing gloves in the supermarket, especially if you're taking them off and throwing them in the parking lot, which means you were a selfish animal and you should be ashamed of yourself. And you are a selfish animal if you are throwing your gloves in the supermarket parking lot. That needs to stop. People need to stop doing that. So if you're just going to throw your gloves in the supermarket parking lot, don't wear them. Don't even bother. Don't be an animal. Don't be a pig. Don't leave your infected material for someone else to clean up. I say it's a good idea to wear gloves because it shows other people that you care, that you're interested in protecting them. I will say the same thing about wearing a mask. You do not go out without wearing a mask. If you're going to the supermarket, if you're going to the gas station, you do not go out without wearing a mask. Because it sends a message to people that you are aware of what's going on, that you are thoughtful, that you care, that you are interested in their safety. But as far as the food packaging is concerned, you can wipe things down with disinfectant wipes if you want. Not obviously raw food that you're going to eat because that's bad for you. Or you can just leave everything in your car, out in the garage, somewhere outside of your home for 24 to 48 hours and you won't have to worry about it. And that's from the FDA. So it seems that we're okay with packaging. Now again, as I said, respiratory droplets, okay? As long as people aren't coughing on you, as long as you're not touching things that people have coughed on and touching your face, generally speaking, you're going to be okay. This is not quite as contagious in an open space as some would have you believe. In a closed space, it is very contagious. Okay? If we talk about cruise ships, if we talk about our military ships, if we talk about nursing homes, if we talk about areas with recirculating air or areas with low air movement, this virus spreads like wildfire from place to place. But outdoors, in big open spaces, it's a lot tougher for COVID or for this coronavirus to infect people. The third question that people have, is there a treatment? The answer to that question right now is no. But if you were to go into the hospital today, you would have a much, much better chance of getting well than someone who went into the hospital a month ago. Because doctors have learned and tried a lot of things. We know some new things that work, such as ECMO blood oxygenation. Say that 10 times fast. ECMO blood oxygenation. What is that? An ECMO machine basically pulls the blood out of you, oxygenates it, and then returns it to your body. It's an external way of oxygenating your blood. That is part of the problem with COVID-19, is people's blood oxygen levels drop rapidly. So by taking the blood outside of the body, they can get oxygen back into it, get it back into you, people survive. Only in extreme cases are they using this, by the way. This is, the ventilator is failing you. They're going to go to this. So they have a treatment beyond the ventilator. We've learned that having someone lay on their stomach rather than their back makes it possible for them to breathe. We have learned that this virus does severe lung damage long before people show symptoms that would send them to the hospital. So basically, by the time people are going to the hospital, they are in distress. They are a critical care patient at that point. And one of the things that we're learning is that earlier intervention can prevent them from getting to that point. Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, is an example of this. He went to the hospital when his blood oxygen levels started to drop. They gave him oxygen for a couple of nights, and he was able to recover. Had they waited until he was in distress, he may have wound up on a ventilator. He may have died. Because one of the things that we believe about this virus is that when you get into that severe respiratory distress and you start breathing really hard, it takes the virus deeper into your lungs and creates more infection. We have ways of treating the cytokine storms, the aggressive immune response that causes some young, otherwise healthy people to die because their own immune system turns against them. This was something that we saw with H1N1. We've learned that hydroxychloroquine probably doesn't do much for most patients. We've learned that remdesivir isn't doing a heck of a lot for most patients. There are other drugs that are being tested. We haven't heard about those. There have been some very promising results from people who received plasma with COVID-19 antibodies from people who got healthy. And you may have heard that Tom Hanks and his wife have donated their plasma into a research project to try and find a treatment based on plasma. This is what we used for the Spanish flu outbreak in 1918. 100-year-old technology still works today and is evidence of all of the different things that the medical community is trying. And that's what we're doing. We are trying. Everyone is trying to find answers. And as time goes by and clinical studies wrap up, we are going to have more answers. Next week, we'll know more. The week after that, we'll know more. By the end of this summer, we should have a pretty solid picture of what this virus is, how it infects people, why it kills people, and possibly a treatment. What is the mortality rate? We don't know. And the reason we don't know is because there hasn't been enough testing. And I'm going to get into that in a little bit. We're going to talk about testing, and we're going to talk about what testing means. Basically, if we don't test, we cannot say definitively what the mortality rate is, because the mortality rate is a percentage of everyone who gets the disease. In most places in the United States and in Europe, the only people who are getting tested are people who go to the hospital with serious illness. So we look at the number of cases, and we look at the number of deaths, and we say, oh my God, there's a 10% mortality rate. There's a 4, 5, 8% mortality rate. Epidemiologists don't believe that. Epidemiologists believe the mortality rate is closer to 1%, maybe 0.5%. That this may in fact be no more deadly than the flu, or maybe a little more deadly than the flu. But there's no way of knowing who is going to get a severe illness from this. With the flu, we primarily worry about young children, older people, and those with compromised immune systems. With COVID-19, anyone can die. That's an unpleasant reality of this virus. It can kill anyone for any reason. Here in Massachusetts, people in their 50s disproportionately represent the number of infected and represent a significant amount of those who've died. And were it not, I believe, for the infections that have spread through nursing homes, people in their 50s would be the largest group of people dying from this. 50s is not old. This, by the way, is the same group that was susceptible to the swine flu, the H1N1, a few years back. So as far as the mortality rate is, we don't know. We will know at some point in the future when we have widespread testing, either for current infection or antibodies. We'll get there, but it's going to take some time. The other question related to the virus, is there a vaccine? And the answer right now is no. Whatever you may have heard about there's a vaccine and they're withholding it from it, no. No one is withholding a vaccine. There may be a vaccine that works right now, but we're not going to know for another year because it has to go through a clinical trial and an approval process. They're not just going to start injecting people with something in the hope that it keeps us from dying, because that will kill more people than it helps. We have to make sure that the vaccine is safe. In other words, people don't get COVID-19 from it, or people don't get some other illness from it. We have to make sure it's effective. We have to figure out how long it's effective. Because one of the things we don't know right now is whether or not having COVID-19 antibodies will keep you from getting COVID-19 again. Is it a permanent immunity? Is it a temporary immunity? Is it an immunity at all? We don't know. We will have those answers. We have to be patient. The other thing we have to be patient about is reopening. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute here on WMFO Medford.
When I was young, I lived in a world of dreams, of moods and myths and illusionary schemes.